is case 54823, Arguello versus Sunset Station Incorporated. Ms. Murch, Mr. Van Alphen, are you prepared to proceed? Very well.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Julie Murch, and I represent the appellant Marcus Arguello. The lower court erred when it construed NRS 651.010 to apply to the motor vehicle itself versus the contents of the motor vehicle. As this court knows well, statutes and derogation of the common law must be strictly construed. As I will explain, there is nothing in NRS 651.010 that compels this court or allows this court to construe that motor vehicles are included within the statute. If you look at page one of your handout, it is the statute 651.005 and 651.010, the subject statute. As you know, statutes are not to be rendered meaningless. If you look at subsection one of the statute, if we accept respondents' argument, then it would totally be unnecessary to have the phrase "are left in a motor vehicle" after the phrase "any property bought by a patron upon the premises." Respondent argues that any property includes the motor vehicle itself. If that is true, the following phrase, "are left in a motor vehicle," would not be necessary. If you skip down to subsection 3 and 4 of the statute, the words "deposit," "safe," "vault," and "easily fit" or put in those subsections. Another rule of statutory construction is that the court is not to interpret statutes such that there could be absurd results. I respectfully submit to you that one cannot, of course, deposit a motor vehicle into a safe or a vault, nor can it easily fit into a safe or a vault. So under that structure of the statute, there is nothing clearly saying in any way or even inferring that the motor vehicle itself was included in this limiting statute.
Is it ambiguous?
Your Honor, I would submit that it is not ambiguous, but if you believe it is, you can start, let's look at the legislative history. I don't believe it's ambiguous at all. If the Nevada legislature wanted to include motor vehicle within the ambit of the statute, it should have done so. It could have done so. Clearly, it could have done so, especially when we know that the common law is to, under NRS 1.030, one of the first statutes ever enacted by our legislature, is supposed to be the law of the state unless repugnant to the laws of the state or in conflict with the laws of the state. So I would submit that the fact that they didn't include it in there is evidence that it was not meant to be included in there. Moreover, there were three other versions of the statute. In the first version of the statute, any property referred to any property left in the guest room. In 1993, the version expanded to any property left in the guest room or left in the motor vehicle.
But isn't that getting to legislative history, and it doesn't really matter unless it's ambiguous?
That is true. You don't have to go to legislative history, but you're permitted to under rules of statutory instruction. You are permitted to look at the legislative history, but you do not have to if it's plain on its face. You determine that it is plain on its face. You don't have to look to the legislative history. That is correct. But the current version of the statute is the first version of the statute that is includes not only the guest room or the property, the guest room or the motor vehicle, but as defined in 651.005, which the legislator deemed necessary to define, premises itself. And if you look at the legislative history, the comments by Mr. Whittemore of the Nevada Resort Association, he made it clear after the Tienda case decided by this court, wherein this court said, look, you guys are not clear. The statute does not apply to articles left in the vehicle. You need to go back. You just said that. And then subsequently, Mr. Whittemore went back as set forth in the legislative history, and you can look on page 2 of your handout, where he specifically clarified for Chairman Porter that the statute, what they were trying to do, was only applying to the personal property left in the vehicle, rather than the vehicle itself that was being discussed. So that's the 1993 version of the statute. And above on that page, he refers to this court's unwillingness to derogate the common law unless it was explicitly stated in the statute that the statute applied to the articles. The legislature changed the law in 1993. Then two years later, again, Mr. Whittemore was back testifying both before the Senate Committee on the Judiciary and approximately 3 weeks later before the Assembly Judiciary Committee, wherein he clarified in colloquy with Senator Adler, referred on page 3, that all the current version, the amendment would do, which is now the current versions of the statute, all we were doing was expanding the protections afforded to the patrons from the guest room itself and the vehicle itself to all portions everywhere on the property. And they defined premises in order to ensure that that was done. So he said that in both committees. And what's interesting is on page 4, he says that the new law, that the amendment would apply regarding property patrons and guests bring to the entire property, not just their rooms or their cars. Last year, we added cars, and now we are going to try to cover the entire premises. Well, as we know, Mr. Whittemore said in the last session, the last year, meaning the 1993, he specifically told Chairman Porter, it doesn't apply to cars, what we're talking about. We're just saying that the contents of the vehicle are going to be subject to the limiting statute. So with that context, one can reasonably conclude that he is saying, look, last year we added cars in terms of the location of where the property is found, the personal property is found, and now we're just going to add the entire premises so that a patron who comes onto the property of an innkeeper in Nevada, the casino comes to mind many times, that patron knows they can't leave their property underneath their seat at the swimming pool or in the spa, not only not in the car but or not in their guest room, but any place on the premises. So I would submit to you that that is what the focus of the statute was to expand the area covered by the statute. In no way, there's no evidence, I would respectfully submit, that the motor vehicle itself was meant to be included. And Mr. Whittemore, the Nevada Resort Association, in my opinion, confirmed that. If you look at I'd like to get into some public policy comments as well. As the court knows, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people use valet over the years. I mean, hundreds of thousands probably a year. And they use it for convenience and safety. To require gross neglect to be proven and then limit the liability to $750, in my opinion, would not promote employers, innkeepers, to hire honest personnel, competent employees, or establish reasonable safety procedures. It's difficult to prove gross neglect, and even if you do, the limitation is only $750. Innkeepers don't have to have valet parking. It's voluntary. So if they have it, however, they have to exercise concomitant care that they expect the patron to exercise with respect to their personal property. The purpose of the statute is to make patrons responsible, and it should also be reflected in maintaining the common law of bailment and negligence, simple negligence, without clear expression otherwise. There's also, if you look on page 5 of your handout, although this is certainly not dispositive, I did find it telling that the actual claim ticket given to my client, Mr. Arguello, refers only to the personal articles that the innkeeper, in this case Sunset Station, is not responsible for. And they appear to make a distinction between the actual vehicle itself in the very last sentence, where it says any claim for damages to the vehicle must be made before leaving the premises. So, Your Honors, there are public policy reasons, and there are statutory construction rules that make this, in my opinion, a straightforward case that one must apply to preserve the common law consistent with the statutes of the state of Nevada, that statutes and derogation of The common law must be strictly construed. I would ask that the court reverse the district court's ruling and remand this case for a trial on damages. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Merch. Mr. Van Alphen.
May it please the court, my name is Scott Van Alphen. I represent Sunset Stations, Inc., which is doing business at Sunset Station Hotel and Casino. I'd like to go right to the NRS 651010 and basically address a little bit of the history of this statute. As has been discussed, prior to 1993, the statute specifically addressed items that were stolen or taken from a room where a patron had deposited their items. And the Tienda versus Holiday Casino case, which this court addressed, basically looked at this and said, okay, here we have a vehicle stolen from a valet with all of the patron's goods in it. And now they want to use 651010 in order to protect the hotel. And this court properly said, look, the plain language of this statute says that it protects what's stolen from a room only. We can't expand that language because the statute doesn't say it. So we can't apply that statute. So in response to that, in 1993, the statute was amended to add not only the items that were in a room, but also items that were in a vehicle. And then 2 years after that, it was expanded even further. Now, I want to just address really quickly the 1995 legislative history that was quoted by appellant's counsel, where it basically said Mr. Whitmore, read into the record, would apply regarding property patrons and guests bring to the entire property, not just their rooms or their cars. I read that just opposite of the way she's arguing it, and that is he's saying, look, we're talking about the property. He doesn't define what it is. It doesn't include mopeds, doesn't include motorcycles, doesn't include cars.
But he counsel, if we're going to look at this, then we have to assume that the legislation itself or the statute itself is ambiguous.
I don't believe that it's ambiguous.
Then we don't get to what Mr. Whitmore may have said.
Then I'll leave that alone and just go right into basically the plain language of this statute basically says any hotel is one of the definitions. Sunset Station is a hotel. Well, it's a hotel casino that falls squarely within that realm and is one of the entities that's intended to be protected by this statute. The next is it talks about that there is no civil liability for an innkeeper or the hotel for theft, loss, damage, or destruction of any property brought by a patron upon the premises. Now, we know that in 651005, premises is defined as any parking lot. So we have a valet parking lot here. The vehicle was stolen. The facts in this case are not in dispute. It's pretty clear what took place. But what we're dealing with is how does this all fit together? So the hotel is covered. We also have the premises, which includes any parking lot. Not a designation of what type, but any parking lot. And then it goes on that we're not civilly liable for any property. Now, there's two kinds of property, basically. There's real property and there's personal property. Mr. Arguello brought a vehicle onto the premises and parked it at valet, and it's defined as any property. I don't see how that can be ambiguous, other than they try to use the argument or left in a motor vehicle. Using the term and the connector or makes two mutually exclusive possibilities within the statute.
Or it modifies the language, any property.
Well, here's the way I see the reading of it, and that is, boarding house in the state is not civilly liable for the theft, loss, damage, or destruction of any property brought by the patron upon the premises or left in a motor vehicle upon the premises, and then the term because picks up both of those terms and says because of theft, burglary, fire, or otherwise in the absence of gross negligence. So the statute,
why would you, because it looks like any property brought upon the premises encompasses everything, so why would you need her left in a motor vehicle upon the premises?
I think it has
doesn't that support her argument?
I think it has to do with the legislative history on this one, and meaning simply why the statute in 1993 was amended based on the Tienda case. And it's language that's been left in based on the Tienda case. The other language in subsection 2 of 651010 is the language of the rooms. You could make the same argument for subsection 2. But I believe what's going on here is the statute has left in the language of the previous statute, but at the same time has put in any property to broaden not just the premise, but also the type of property, because a hotel cannot be an insurer of all property brought upon the premises.
No, it's very clear by way of statute and the intent behind that statute that that wasn't to be the case, that you're to be the insurer of all property. But it brings me another question comes to mind on your parking claim checks. If the statute protects any damage, theft, or loss to the motor vehicles, why is there a particular language in your claim check that any claim for damages of the vehicle must be made before leaving the premises? If you're absolutely protected from theft, loss, or damage, how are we supposed to interpret that?
I think a lot of the claim check language comes from the problem of people leaving the premises, coming back and saying, oh no, I've got problems with my car. I've had stuff stolen. I have damage to it.
If you're protected by the statute, why would you even have to make an indication that you're to report those before you leave the premises?
I think it's actually to help security in making sure that what happens while they're on the premises or on the property is reported properly. But at the same time, it's the statute that protects the hotel and not necessarily the claim ticket.
I understand, so but it's just curious.
It comes down to basically the history of the amendments to the statute are basically, I think it appeared the language was left in based on the prior history and the reason for the amendments, and then the expansion of it in 1995 to where we are now is what we have as far as that language.
Well, it sounds like your argument then is that or left in a motor vehicle upon the premises is simply superfluous. And was retained in the 1995 version by mistake.
I don't know if it's necessarily by mistake or simply because it was addressing a particular case and so they left that in, a particular set of facts as far as why they amended it. Because we have a similar issue.
Okay, let's assume that that's why, that it's not superfluous and that its purpose is to address specifically the Tienda case. How does it do that?
Well, I guess it comes down to this.
And that under the facts and the holding in Tienda, how does this language address that case?
Well, the language in the statute where it says, or a motor vehicle upon the premises, is what specifically addresses the Tienda case.
How?
Well, because initially when Tienda was ruled upon, it was the pre-1993 statute that only addressed items stolen from a room that a patron had put their stuff into. The Tienda case was a vehicle stolen from valet with its goods inside of it. And this court said, we can't expand the language because the plain language doesn't allow us to. So by adding in 1993 the language, or left in a motor vehicle, which is what was added in 93, that specifically addressed, okay, now we have stuff stolen from a room protected, we have stuff stolen from a car in a parking lot protected. And then in 95, they expanded that, say, well, we have this whole premises of the hotel, and we have this property that's being brought on. And so they expanded it to the point of saying any property, or, and then, yeah, do I think it's somewhat superfluous? I do. So is subsection 2, if you want to look at it that way. But again, that's addressing the pre-1993 statute. That language was also left in.
So it is ambiguous. We can't figure out what's going on. Justice Hardesty may interpret it one way, I may interpret it another way. Two reasonable interpretations, I presume.
I suppose that's a possibility.
But again, if you looked at legislative history, and I don't see where in 93, 95, or any time since then, the history would tell us that they intended to cover a motor vehicle itself.
Well, all I can do is look at the statute from 1995 where it says any property. If they were trying to exclude, I mean, there are so many things we could list out on either what to include or exclude. But what they did here is they used the term any property. And if you look to the legislative history of what Mr. Whitmore said, he is saying, look, the language which I read in the record earlier would apply regarding property. He didn't say what types of property. He didn't say limitations or expansions. He just said property.
How does that square with subsection 4? That the any property that you're suggesting includes a motor vehicle should be deposited in a safe or vault or easily fit within a safe or vault.
Well, and I actually think that subsection 4 goes toward our argument in saying that it says the liability of the owner or keeper does not exceed 750, but then it goes on talking about something that cannot easily fit into a vault or safe, and it says that unless the owner or keeper receives the property for deposit for safekeeping and consents to assume liability greater than 750 for its theft, loss, damage, or destruction in a written agreement in which the patron guest specifies the value of the property. So now they're saying, okay, if we're going to take something bigger than a vault and in excess of 750, it's got to be in a written agreement and it's got to have the value placed on it. Or, they're not responsible for this. It's taking into account that, yeah, there are going to be some items that are too big. And a car is too big. But unless they come in with an extremely valuable car and say, you know what, hotel, I want you to consent to keep my property protected, and it has to be in writing with a value on it, or they're not responsible. And that subsection 4 actually goes toward the argument that they're not limiting this.
And that squares with your claim check how?
Again, the claim check is a little bit of a problem because it doesn't specifically give word for word what the statute says. But that's something that they put together in order to avoid problems of people coming back and reporting to security things that have been either taken or whatever while, you know, after they'd left the property. So to me, that is more of an issue of they're trying to make sure whatever takes place on their property, they know right away, they make a report. It doesn't go toward liability, but the true protection comes from the statute, not necessarily from the claim ticket. Because the claim ticket could go way beyond what's reasonable and say, hey, even if we run into your car, we're not responsible for it. And that would be beyond what the statute says. And so it goes back to the statute. So that's what we're dealing with here is the statute. When you say any property without qualification and without anything else, it means any personal property. It can't be real property because we can't bring it on to the premises. So it's personal property, and that would include a vehicle. And so that's basically what this comes down to. My final point, just quickly, I would like to address the standing issue of Mr. Arguello. With regards to standing, the plaintiff basically made in their own brief an argument that this court review is de novo, and that this court can address especially jurisdictional issues when they quoted the old Aztec Mine versus Brown. What we're talking about here is the plaintiff making a claim and receiving compensation from his own carrier. At that point, because this isn't a personal injury action, there's no medical bills, there's no pain and suffering, we're dealing with property damage only, he is compensated fully for his loss on this property. Then what happens is that right transfers over to Farmers Insurance, who made the payment, and if they have a cause of action, they can then take it against whoever they feel is appropriate as far as going after. Now, if they felt like Sunset Station was appropriate, they would still have to go through 651.010. But in this situation, that right of subrogation, whether it's contractual or implied, is with Farmers Insurance. So our contention is that Mr. Arguello does not have standing because he's the wrong plaintiff, bringing the wrong cause of action because that's Farmers against the wrong defendant because NRS 651 protects Sunset Station from this type of civil liability.
Well, you're saying then there's absolutely no right to any partial subrogation to pursue claims over and above what perhaps your insurance company allows pursuant to its policies, but you've sustained damage in the claim over and above that.
Well, in this situation,
so that just goes away.
It's not that it goes away, but in this situation, they accepted the check, which was less than policy limits. They didn't dispute the amount. The total loss settlement, again, was less than policy limits. So for them to make an excess claim, they haven't even received their full compensation from their own carrier. And so basically our argument is that the claim here would be Farmers against whoever would be responsible, mainly the criminal who stole the vehicle.
For what they paid.
What's that?
For what they paid.
For what they paid.
Correct.
True. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Van Alpen.
Sure, I'm sorry, I forgot to specifically reserve my...
You certainly may, Ken. Looks as if you have about 5 minutes and 15 seconds.
Hopefully it won't be that long. Since, again, like the prior argument, since it's fresher in my mind, I'll start with the standing argument. There is nothing in this record that sets forth what the policy says what is covered by the farmer's policy, what wasn't covered by the farmer's policy. So for respondent counsel to say that Mike Hiley compensated for his loss is simply without foundation. Moreover, assuming there is a subrogation, let's assume there is a subrogation paragraph in a policy, which there probably is, we don't know if Mr. Arguello, if he recovers, he would have to repay that to the insurance company.
The record doesn't show the policy terms.
Right? Yes, Justice.
And there was no motion made to join Farmers as a party.
Yes, Justice.
Okay.
I would also like to address, just briefly, the argument. I kind of picked up from the panel, either the statute is clear on its face or it's not. And if it's not, then we go look at legislative history. Mr. Van Alphen makes the comment, well, how are we supposed to define any property? Well, it'd be good to start with maybe the motor vehicle, since I respectfully suggest that most of us that go park in valet parking maybe assume that if the car is stolen, that we're not limited by $750. I think it would be in the public interest to let us know that on the claim check so that we could turn around and go park in the parking lot or go to a different casino or a different inn. So I would disagree that they couldn't have defined property. They defined premises, and premises could have an expansive definition, and I think they defined premises because that was the reason for the amendment, as I argued earlier. And I take up with what Justice Hardesty said, that you can't, under rules of statutory construction, ignore the language in the statute. You try, as justices, you will try to incorporate all of them into your understanding of the statute. And if you look at or left in a motor vehicle, I don't think the Nevada legislature made a mistake in leaving that in there. Certainly if you look at Mr. Whittemore's comments and with the background of the Tienda case, I think that was purposeful because they were talking about personal articles and not about the motor vehicle itself. So with that, Your Honors, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Merch. Mr. Van Alphen, thank you both for your time and attention this morning. This case will stand submitted. The court